Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Chapter 12, Mahinimurti bewilders Lord Shiva, Text 38. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha, Disya Tvam Vibhuda Shvesta, Svam Nishtam Atmanastitaha, Yanme Sri Rupaya Swairam, Mohit Yanga Maya. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, Dishtya, all auspiciousness, Tvam, unto you, Vibhuda Shrestha, O best of all the demigods, Swam, in your own, Nishtam, fixed situation, Atmana, of your own self, Stitaha, you are situated, Yat, as, Me, mine, Sri Rupaya, appearance like a woman, Swairam, sufficiently, Mohitaha, enchanted, Api, in spite of, Anga, O Lord Shiva, Maya, by my potency. Translation purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Supreme Personality of Godhead said, O best of the demigods, although you have been amply harassed because of my potency, and assuming the form of a woman, you are established in your position. Therefore may all good fortune be unto you. Purport. Since Lord Shiva is the best of the demigods, he is the best of all devotees. Vaishnavam yata Shambhu. His exemplary character was therefore praised by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who gave his benediction by saying, May all good fortune be unto you. When a devotee becomes a little proud, the Supreme Lord sometimes exhibits his supreme power to dissipate the devotee's misunderstanding. After being amply harassed by Lord Vishnu's potency, Lord Shiva resumed his normal, unagitated condition. This is the position of a devotee. Devotees should not be agitated under any circumstances, even in the worst reverses. As confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita 6.22, Yasmin stito nidukena guru napi vichalyate. Because of his firm faith, full faith in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, a devotee is never agitated, even in the greatest trials. This pridelessness is possible only for the first-class devotee of whom Lord Shambhu is one. Shri Bhagavan Vacha Disya Tvam Vibhuda Shvesta Svam Nishtam Atmanastitaha Yanme Sri Rupaya Swaram Vimahot Yanga Maya. Supreme Personality of Godhead said, O best of the demigods, although you have been amply harassed because of my potency, assuming the form of a woman, you are establishing your position. Therefore may all good fortune be unto you. Krishna gives many lessons in Bhagavad Gita, but some of them are repeatedly given. For instance, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tells us, as his first instruction, that we're not this body, that we're eternal souls. And then immediately he says that although we're not this body, we have to learn how to tolerate material desires specifically, the dualities of material existence, and the dualities and the desires that may arise from trying to counteract them. Matra sparchu sukhantaya shitoshna sukha dukha da. Agama paino nityas tam titiksha svabharata. So Titeksha Karunika Surida Sarvadevinam. So the Sarabhushana, the decoration of the devotee, begins with titikshava, tolerance. In the material world, no one can tolerate the present circumstances. Either we're hankering for better ones, or we're lamenting over the fact that we couldn't create better ones. But these are all manifestations of our perverted desire to become God. Although we think we're very nice and that we're worthy of being God because we're so nice. And actually the soul is nice because he's part and parcel of God. So in one sense, he is God, but he's a very small part of God. The desire to become the whole God is a problem. Because number one, we're not the whole God. And we've never been the whole God, and we'll never become the whole God. So the problem is we're an illusion. And in illusion, we're simply wasting our time being involved in material activities, and material activities are basically just created by the Maya under Krishna's direction to make us think that we have a chance in the future of becoming God. We just made a few mistakes in the past, but when we rectify them, then we'll actually become the Supreme. Just a matter of time separates us. So that Supreme may manifest itself as being the most beautiful, the most attractive, the most refined, which is Radharani's part, or the most powerful, the most controlling. Either controlling things or enjoying things. They're both manifestations of the desire to become supreme. And then the ultimate one is we're actually maintaining other living entities. We're the support, we're the maintainer, we're the best friend of other living entities. But this is all illusion, because neither we're the controller, nor we're the enjoyer, nor are we the supreme friend of everyone. That's all reserved for Krishna, eternally. But when we want to imagine ourselves in that position, then we have a choice. Either we can choose between lust, or greed, or anger. And when we choose one of those, naturally the others will follow too, and then we'll wind up in illusion. And right now, it's not that we may find ourselves in illusion. Right now, we're walking around in an illusion. It's not that we might fall into Maya. We may fall out of Maya sometime. Therefore, one has to practice tolerance. Now, how to practice tolerance? That's the whole science of Krishna consciousness, is learning how to practice tolerance. It's not that one day we're going to wake up and we're just going to be tolerant. Or that if you hold your hand up, like they do in India, you hold it up for years and years and your hand withers away, you proved how tolerant you are. Or you flagellate yourself, you take some whip and you hit yourself, that way you learn tolerance. It's not the formula given in Bhagavad Gita. Formula, at least, as recommended, especially in Kali Yuga, for tolerance, where people are the least amount of tolerant, because people are the most lusty, they're the most angry, they're the most greedy of any yuga, and it's unrestricted and unrestrained. Therefore, for people to try to learn tolerance, just by sitting in a class, for instance, now we're all sitting here in a class, and many things may go through our mind. Hopefully some ecstasy. But many other things may go through the mind too. This is really torture. He's telling me something I knew years ago. Or he's telling me something, I can't believe this. I can't agree with this. It's too much. Or I can agree with it, but it's too painful. I can't bear to listen to it. I feel very sleepy right now. I should just close my eyes and relax. Therefore, hearing, which is the first principle of Krishna consciousness, implies a great amount of tolerance. It's great austerity to sit in any class, and therefore many times speakers will just tell jokes. Because it's so painful to watch people fall asleep when you're trying to talk to them. Could you imagine you're married, you're on your honeymoon, and you're talking to your wife, and every time you talk to her, she falls asleep. And right before her eyes close, she says, "I love you." And then it becomes extremely difficult to have a relationship with anyone. So similarly, the classes, hopefully, they're all about establishing a relation with Krishna and our reaction, "Oh, Krishna." So one has to learn tolerance, because Maya is not going to let us so easily just go back to Krishna. It takes some determination, some effort to stay awake, at least, to hear, to try and actually hear. And as I often said, we can't just say, "I'm a good person, I came to class," unlike 90% of those other rascals in the temple who never come to class. That I'm a nice person, I'm good. But that's not the sign of being good. Just we were able to, we had enough determination to put our body down here. We hold up a little, just like they have outside, they have that statue of the man trying to escape. And they come by and they put flowers and whatever, show he was good. But what did he do? He was just trying to get out of this building. But if we try to escape from this building, no one's going to put any flowers down for us. So just having our body here is not sufficient. To hear, we also have to try and listen. And that means requires even greater tolerance, because our mind will tell us that this subject matter is certainly going to belittle you. That right now, according to our minds, we're the greatest thing that ever existed in the universe since time immemorial. And this whole philosophy is meant to belittle us, our false ego, to find out that we're not the best thing that ever happened in the universe, which is quite a shock to most people. Because most of the time they go and they listen, they read the newspaper, whatever, just to discover how they are the best thing in the universe. And if someone comes along and says, "My dear sir, you're the greatest thing that ever happened since time immemorial." And you say, "Wow, finally I met someone with some intelligence. Someone I can relate to." But no one believes that, especially the people who tell it to you. What they're trying to do is become the best thing that ever happened in the universe by controlling you. But if someone comes along and says, "Actually, there's a God, and it's not you," then most of us are just going to think this person is an offender. Or as Krishna said, or as they say in Bhagavad Gita, "The fools, they deride me at my descending in this human form. They don't know my transcendental nature," as I've explained in Bhagavad Gita, "and my future dominion over all that be." Therefore, we not only have to try to hear or put our body here so we can hear, but we actually have to hear. And how do we test if we actually heard anything? Well, if we heard anything, we're going to remember it. That's why these books are written. That's why we record these classes, just to test us and see if we remember anything. So tomorrow, you wake up and you try to remember whether you went to class yesterday or not. And who gave class? What book do they read? At least that much memory we should try to cultivate. We should test ourselves tomorrow morning, wake up. Did I go to class? No, I think I was in the prasadam room or something. I can't remember. What did they talk about? Oh, I'm sure it was about Krishna or something. Who gave class? Yeah, okay, it was probably about Krishna. So that's called second. We have to remember what we, and then not only we remember it, we have to try to see it. Because unless we actually see what we heard, then how do we know if it was real or not? If we can't see it, we gave a whole class about unicorns and the history of unicorns. And people's intimate relation with unicorns. And you wake up tomorrow, yeah, I remember. That was the most exciting class I heard in a long time. The only one that excited me. Unicorns, that's it. I see them everywhere.
That's how we're going to remember tomorrow.
What's that? At least then it was success. You remembered something. But we have to actually see what it says, and we have to see with spiritual eyes what's being said, with spiritual vision. Then we could try to apply it in our lives. Otherwise, how can we apply something in our lives we can't see? You're in the complete darkness, and someone says, can you pick up the pen on the table over there? You can't see the table. You can't see the pen. You don't believe they exist. How are you going to possibly try to pick them up? Pick up the pen. So unless we can actually see what's being said, we can't do anything. We can't apply it. And unless we apply it, we'll never realize if it's true or not, what actually works. If I told you, press this button, and, you know, $1 million is going to pop out of the funnel at the other end. You say, no, I'm not going to do it. I don't believe you. No, try it. See if it works. No, I'm sorry. It's too far out. It couldn't work. I have no faith in you. Get lost. And then someone else comes along, presses a button, $1 million pops out. You say, wait a second. It only probably worked for him. It could never work for me. We have no faith, we're not going to do it. And if it works for someone else, oh, that was just a fluke. It was by accident. It couldn't work for me. So one has to see enough vision, enough based on one's own previous experience, and then try it out and see if it actually works. And because the basic principle is that we're servants, it's a very difficult thing to do. Every step is difficult. It's difficult to hear that we're servants of God, that there's a person categorically supreme forever and ever and ever, and maybe even beyond that. And it's not us. Oh my God. What did he say? There's no chance. There must be some chance. I'm a good person. I help so many people. Come on, give me a break. Maybe time immemorial from now, maybe there's another chance or something. No, there's a person category. Eternally, he's going to be God. And we can't take his place. And he doesn't share. He's not so generous. Okay, you want to become God? I'll retire. It's not going to work like that. So to accept that, every step of the way is a challenge. To hear about it, to remember it, to understand it, to apply it, and then to actually want to realize it. And all that requires a lot of tolerance of our false ego, which will tell us, this doesn't make any sense, this person's nonsense, don't accept it, you're special. Even God doesn't believe it, still I believe it. You have one devotee, me, Maya. I'll never leave you. Oh, thank you, Maya. You're so kind. you're better than my mother. I am your mother. Forever. It's you and me, son. We'll do it. Don't worry. Only time separates us. Maybe a long time, but be tolerant. Be patient. And one day, your name will be up there in glittering lights. So-and-so is God. Ah. I surrender. So, the whole material world is meant to crush our false ego, in case you haven't noticed. Although everyone in the material world is competing to be God, no one is really appreciated much for the effort. And therefore, people with the most intelligence, they pretend that they're servants in their attempt to become God. But generally, they detect it after some time that this person doesn't really want to serve me. It was all cheating. They want to actually lord it over me. They want to become the supreme. They want to become my lord. In the name of becoming my servant, they're actually trying to become my lord. Not you. You're an exception to the rule. Jai. In the universe, at least, we have one exception. So, the whole material world is meant to put us, as Lord Shiva was put into a position where he had to feel a little humble. For us, we think, oh, this is really bad. I'm feeling humble. Where can I get my false prestige back again? I felt so good, my false prestige. I felt I was God, although everyone thought I was dog. They thought the D-O-G, G-O-D spelled backwards is dog. So everyone, I was thinking I was God, and everyone thought I was dog. They thought the opposite. And I'm bewildered. How is it that God has become dog? But actually, persons who are trying to become God, they're always dog. Therefore, one should see that this material world is an attempt to put us into a humble position. And unless we're feeling humble, then material nature is going to assist us in our advancement, spiritual advancement, by forcing us to become humble. By forcing us to give up this false ego of imagining ourselves to be something other than simply a tiny little soul who's either caught up in material illusion or caught into trying to become a humble servant of the servant of the servant of Krishna. Therefore, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is saying, I've been chanting the holy names, these glorious names I've just said, how glorious they are, and now I don't have any taste. Chanting, you know, Mickey Mouse, Donald Duck has the same effect on my heart as Hare Krishna. Or maybe I remember my childhood pastimes when I chant Mickey Mouse. Do they have Mickey Mouse here? I'm sure they have it all. Mickey Mouse is all pervading in Kali Yuga. You heard of Mickey Mouse?
Yeah.
Of course. <yeah. laughs> And Donald Duck, the name, form, quality, and pastimes of a rat. It brings back our childhood pastimes, you know, and Santa Claus and reindeer and all these, the bright part of our life, hopefully. So when we chant Hare Krishna, why, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, why don't I have any taste? The only happiness I get during the day is when, if I vowed to chant 16 rounds, is when my last counterbeat falls down and my heart opens up to new expectations, new feelings. Why? Because he says, Trinad api sunichena. One should learn how to become tolerant. Tolerant of what? Tolerant of our false ego and being willing to accept Krishna's attempt by himself personally, by his representatives, to free us from our false ego. Is that boring?
Boring.
Srinadapi sunitena. One should become more tolerant than the tree. You can complain, you can tell the tree, you know, why are you standing there naked? You know, this is embarrassing. You know, the tree's not, you say, I think I'm going to, you can do anything to a tree. The dog comes along and picks up his leg and and waters the tree. The tree can't, it tolerates, it has no choice. So a tree has perfect relationship with the other trees. We never, at least we don't know if trees are arguing with each other. They stand there for thousands of years in the same forest and none of them are arguing with each other. So that's an example of souls being very tolerant of other people's presence. On the other hand, if you get two people together, including devotees, for 15 minutes, there's going to be a fight. They're not twice. So therefore, people are put into the position of a tree in order to learn tolerance. Trinadapi suni chena tura iva sahishnuna. So one should be more humble than a blade of grass, realizing that actually the blade of grass and myself are not so different. There's a soul inside the blade of grass and the soul inside this body that I'm in, myself. So one should become more humble than a blade of grass. Then one can become tolerant like a tree, devoid of all sense of false prestige. And what's the result? One could begin to offer respects to others, to stop seeing everyone as a competitor, who's going to become the supreme, who's going to become the most recognized, the most appreciated, the most served. One can give that up and offer respects to others, try to serve others, try to appreciate others, without trying to become falsely proud by receiving honor in return. Because the pride or the honor doesn't go to us, it goes through this body, and this body is the creation of Krishna by his material under the Krishna's direction, creating either the spiritual activities that are being created by the internal energy or the material activities created by the external energy. But they're not our activities. They're Krishna's activities. All we can do is desire either to be in Maya or in Krishna consciousness. And if we desire to be in Krishna consciousness only due to the mercy of the association of devotees and gradually the mercy of Maya crushing our pride, so we accept the mercy of the devotees. So Maya is also another word for Maya is mercy. So Maya is trying to crush our pride so we can take shelter of the devotees and ultimately surrender to Krishna and become Krishna's instrument. Not become Krishna, but an instrument for Krishna. So Lord Shiva is put into a position, but he didn't mind because he understands this is all meant for Krishna, showing an example of how even the greatest personality maybe uses an example to show us how when we're put into difficulty and we're embarrassed, then we should understand that this is also Krishna's mercy, so we take shelter of him and his representatives. That's the whole purport of the material world. And if we understand that, then we can make spiritual progress and actually appreciate others, how they're helping us, our friends, our enemies, different and impartial. Everyone is trying to do the same thing, get rid of our false prestige, either by telling us about Krishna or by revealing the very nature of the material illusory energy. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions or comments? Yes. There's one question here by Sri Devi.
Thank you for the class, Maharaj. I have a question about the mind and the intelligence and the false ego. It says the intelligence is higher than the mind and the false ego is higher than the intelligence. I'm not able to understand how...
I've never heard the false ego is higher than the intelligence.
Oh, it's not like that.
No.
So then it's a misunderstanding.
The soul is higher than the intelligence.
Soul is higher than the intelligence.
No, yeah. False ego is a creation of a material intelligence and mind. And the soul acquires a false ego. As Prabhupada writes in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter, in case you're interested in the chapter and verse, chapter 3, verse number 39. that everything begins with hearing about the glories of the material nature. And then naturally when one hears about the glories of the material nature, then the mind becomes full of material desires.
Mm.
And when the mind is full of material desires, then the senses become agitated.
Mm-hmm.
And then lust, the intelligence, influences the spirit soul to acquire a false ego, mm-hmm. by which it identifies itself with mind and senses, and therefore becomes interested in performing activities for sense gratification.
Mm-hmm.
So false ego is a gift given to us when we desire to serve our mind and senses. Maya provides a false ego for which we can do that. But higher than the intelligence is the soul. So the soul doesn't need a false ego.
Mm-hmm.
He has a real ego.
Mm-hmm.
So if he takes shelter of Krishna, the soul takes shelter of Krishna. Krishna supplies him with real intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
Real ego comes mm-hmm. out. That I'm the servant of the servant
of
Krishna.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, question is, can tolerance be in goodness, passion and ignorance? And if so, what are differences in this type of tolerance?
The hysteria in the mode of ignorance, the hysteria in the mode of passion, and hysteria in the mode of goodness?
No austerity, but tolerance.
Tolerance and hysteria is similar. Yeah, you can drive nails through your nose and your hands and your eyebrows. And tolerate. Think how wonderful I am. Just like I said, some a yogi may put his hand up until it withers. He's learning tolerance, but it's in the mode of ignorance. It's not really accomplishing anything beneficial. No mode of passion, people are tolerating. You're a salesman, you're trying to sell someone something. Your mind is telling you that this person's not, you know, so-and-so, but you're tolerating your mind just so you can get some material gain from them. You're acting as if they're their friend. And the mode of goodness, tolerance in the mode of goodness, you understand, you know, you appreciate how everything is part of God's creation and whatever's happening to you, you're tolerating. But transcendentally, you're absorbed in Krishna consciousness and therefore your full knowledge that you're apart from this material body and mind, material intelligence, and therefore you're not disturbed under any circumstance. You can tolerate anything because you're not identified with the gross and subtle material body anymore. Just like we can tell when we wake up, you can tolerate anything that happens in a dream because you know it's not happening to you. Just like, so, as Krishna says, Bayas Parsheva Saktatma Vidnat Yatmini Yasukam. So Brahma Yoga Yuktatma Sukhamakshayam Ashnute. Such a person is situated by such a person is not disturbed by Asparshe Visaktatma. Such a person is not disturbed by the material senses and material objects, but is always in trance, enjoying the pleasure from within. In this way the self-realized soul enjoys unlimited happiness because he concentrates on the Supreme. So one is concentrated on Krishna, actually in full consciousness of Krishna, as Prabhupada mentions at the end of the verse, a pure devotee can actually exhibit pure tolerance because he doesn't exist in the material world. He exists in the spiritual world.
Thank you. I also have a question. Can I ask? Yeah.
That was your first question. Do you want to ask another one? First question is whether you can ask a question.
Yes.
Okay. we agree with that. What's the second question?
About tolerance. Do you have any advice what to do when we start to chant? And it is so challenging to continue because in the beginning at least I don't have taste and the mind speak a lot of things and... is it the best to just continue whatever mind says? Doesn't matter, just continue, and if I don't If I can't even hear Maha Mantra, just continue and believe that something would happen in the future when I continue to chanting.
That's better than stopping. there's other things better than that, though. But at least if you're on the bottom and you want to just keep on chanting. But there's something better, so because we should also believe that Krishna and his name are non-different, and that he could do a lot more for me than just have me keep on chanting his name with no effect for a long, long time. We should be a little bit, that's why we come to class, find out there's something better than that. It's like a person who's, the idea that there's that Greek mythology, the person pushing the rock up from the hole, and every time he's just about to push the rock out of the hole, it falls back again. But he's doing that. So someone could have said, you know, I've been noticing for a few hundred years that you've been trying to push this rock out of the hole. Did you ever think of like maybe standing on the rock and maybe getting out of the hole yourself rather than trying to push it out of the hole? He said, yeah, I never thought of that. It's a good idea. I'll try that. Can't get the rock out, but maybe you should try to get out. Okay, thank you very much. Grandharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.